Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You are listening to The Evidence Locker. Our cases have been researched using open source and archive materials. It deals with true crimes and real people. Each episode is produced with the utmost respect to the victims, their families, and loved ones. Simon Davis from England was the kind of guy who loved striking up conversations with anyone. He had traveled the world and had entertaining stories of times he spent in Mexico, the States, and Asia. He made friends quickly, as he would always chat to people who sat next to him on a long-haul flight or who waited in line at the airport. It was not unusual for him to share a taxi with someone he had just met. He seemed trustworthy, and tourists didn't seem to mind making the acquaintance of a seasoned traveler like Simon. He would gain their trust, promising to let them in on some local tips and secrets. But Simon Davis was not who he claimed to be. He was a man with a troubled past and a dark future. In 1995, in a matter of days, he had been to Singapore and Thailand, leaving three victims behind him, all bludgeoned to death in their hotel rooms, dismembered and thrown out like yesterday's trash. Who was this man, dubbed by British tabloids as the tourist from hell? John Martin Scripps was born in December 1959 to Leonard and Jean Scripps, and he had an elder sister called Janet. John was not a very strong student, and growing up, he spent a lot of time keeping his father company as he drove trucks. They traveled all over England, living a detached and isolated life. John and his father, Leonard, were very close. When John was only 9 years old, his mother, who was working as a bartender, left his father for another man. Unable to cope with the breakdown of his marriage, Leonard ended his own life by gassing himself in the oven at their home. John discovered his father's body, and needless to say, it traumatized him and caused permanent emotional damage. In the aftermath of his father's suicide, John became a troubled young man. At the age of 14, he ran away from a cadet training camp in France. This was a big deal, as he was underaged in a foreign country, and no one had any idea where he had gone. But John was used to the road and made his way back to England. When he was 15, his undiagnosed dyslexia made learning at school extremely difficult. Always feeling the need to run away when things got tough, John dropped out of school. He moved to the Isle of Wight where his mother ran a guest home. This is when he essentially started his life as a career criminal. As a teenager, John was always in trouble. It started with burglary of homes. Shortly after leaving school, he had his first juvenile conviction for theft and burglary. He did not learn his lesson, and straight after his release, he went back to the life he had known best, that of a thief. For most of his teenage years, he was in and out of jail. Whenever he was out, he would burglarize homes, sell the stolen goods, and use the money to travel. He managed to see quite a bit of the world this way. His routes would be erratic and unpredictable, but it wasn't the best life plan. John also stole when he was traveling. In the late 1970s, he was imprisoned in Israel for stealing from a kibbutz worker. On his return to England in 1982, it did not take long before he was caught stealing again. This time, he was jailed in Surrey. In England, some prisoners, when they have a record of good behavior, are allowed to go home for 2 to 3 days. Convicts are expected to report back at a specific time. But John was never someone to play by the rules. When he was granted home leave, he used the opportunity to escape. He started traveling again, this time to the Americas. And it was on this trip he met a young Mexican woman called Maria Pilar and fell head over heels in love. They traveled together for 2 years, then decided to get married. Maria was 17 and John was 21. After their wedding in Cancun, John took his young bride home to England to live. It didn't take John long to fall back into his familiar habits. Soon after they arrived back in England, he was arrested. John Martin Scripps was charged with 10 counts of theft and burglary. During his arrest, he also assaulted an officer, and all up, he was sent to jail for 3 years. Maria was shocked, as she was under the impression he had worked in imports and exports. But she forgave him and stood by her man. She stayed in the UK, waiting for her husband's release. Not long before his 3-year term was up, he was able to go home on home leave. And like a moth to a flame, John took to the road again and escaped, committing burglaries as he went. And as the pattern had gone, he was arrested again and given yet another 3-year sentence. At this point, Maria had had enough. This time, she was not hanging around waiting for him. Although she was still in love with John, she realized that he would never change. So she filed for divorce. She remarried, this time to the polar opposite to her first husband, Police Constable Ken Cold, an officer in the Royal Protection Squad. This meant that he was part of the team in charge of the royal family's safety. When John heard about this, it shattered him. On home leave, he stalked the couple and even broke into their home, stealing Maria's new husband's clothes. John and Maria met up whenever he was out on leave and were still intimate. But John knew she wasn't his to have, and this aggravated him. During one of their encounters, John attempted to strangle her, and she nearly passed out. Eventually, Maria's second marriage could not wither the storm that was John Martin Scripps, and the couple divorced. Not so much that she chose John, it was just a messy situation. Maria knew John was not good for her, so she decided to move back to Mexico. This appeased John, at least she was not married anymore. Around this time, he legally changed his own name to John Martin, dropping the Scripps part. He realized that he could be making good money by operating as a drug mule. Plus, he would get to travel, something that he loved. He had a couple of good runs until 1987 when he was arrested at Heathrow Airport for suspected drug trafficking. Officials found a safe deposit key on his person, which was eventually traced to a bank in Singapore. In the deposit box, they found 1.5 kilos of heroin, worth $1 million. John Martin was sentenced to 13 years in prison.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
During his stint in Albany Prison on the Isle of Wight, the career criminal was a model prisoner. The prison governor described him as quiet and reserved. John Martin was promoted from dishwasher to butcher in the prison kitchen. Prison officer James Quigley, who used to be a butcher himself, taught John everything he knew, how to dismember and debone slaughtered animals. Officer Quigley remembered his time with John. He was instructed in butchery over a 6-week period in March and April 1993. He was trained to bone out forequarters and hindquarters of beef, sides of bacon, carcasses of pork, and how to portion chicken. John had found something he was really good at. He loved learning from Officer Quigley and once told him that he would like to open a butcher shop once he had served his time. His time was almost done when John was granted home leave. Again, he could not resist temptation and used this freedom to escape. This should have come as no surprise, as he had done it so many times before. His mother even warned authorities not to let him out, as she realized John was selling all of his personal items. She had the sense that he was hatching a plan to leave England and possibly never return. As it turned out, John's mother was right. John was ready to start over, as far away from England as he could get. But he could not leave his John Martin. So using his cellmate's birth certificate, he applied for a passport. Simon Davis was a South African-born, naturalized British citizen, which meant John could obtain a British passport. John traveled to Mexico under his new alias to go and look for the love of his life, Maria Pilar. Maria was not over the moon to see him, but he promised her that he had found religion in prison and that he was serious about changing his ways. He devoted himself to the Virgin of Guadalupe, Mexico's patron saint. Although Maria was still in love with him, she did not want to risk stepping into a relationship with John again. She did, however, take him in, and they lived together. He told her that he found a job importing silk from Thailand, but she did not believe him. She knew him too well, but also felt she did not want to know what he was really up to. John Martin hung out in bars and struck up conversations with travelers. A young British backpacker called Timothy McDowell met John in Cancun. Timothy was an economics graduate from Cambridge. The two became friends and went out partying together. They also traveled together for a while. While in Belize in January 1995, the friends took scuba diving lessons on an island off of the coast. Timothy was never seen alive again. Later, badly mutilated body parts were found in crocodile-infested waters, but could not conclusively be matched to the missing young Brit. Maria remembered that when John returned from Belize, he had changed. His whole demeanor was different to before. She knew that he had done something, but she did not even want to think what that could have been. Soon after this, John left Mexico for San Francisco. Maria would never see him again. From San Francisco, John boarded a plane to Singapore, possibly to look for work as a drug mule. Singapore is home to 5 million people. It is a city-state, island country with a multicultural population. It is a global economic hub, and Changi Airport serves as a bustling gateway to and from Asia. In the 1990s, like today, Singapore was a popular shopping destination, especially if you're looking for a wide variety of cutting-edge, affordable electronics. The proud city-state is also known for being one of the cleanest cities in the world, thanks to its anti-litter laws. If convicted of littering, you could expect a 1,000 Singapore dollar fine. That's about 700 US dollars. Neglecting to flush a public toilet could cost you more than 100. So reporting a garbage bag floating in the harbor off the busy Clifford Pier would not be unusual. Police officers responded to the call and found the black bag with the putrid smell of death. Inside were the legs of a Caucasian male, cut off below the knee with surgical precision. What was a bin liner containing severed limbs doing floating in one of the busiest ports in the world? At first, investigators thought it could possibly be another drowned illegal migrant who had fallen overboard from an overcrowded vessel. But on closer inspection, they realized that this was not the case at all. The way the legs were removed from the rest of the body showed that whoever did this had extensive experience in removing limbs. There was no damage to the knee or surrounding areas, and the ligaments had been neatly cut. It was undoubtedly the work of someone with prior knowledge of anatomy, a doctor or surgeon, perhaps a veterinarian or even a butcher. Medical examiners determined that the victim had died about 2 days before the bag was discovered, but without the rest of the victim's body, Singapore police had a hard job to find out who the victim was. All they knew definitively was that the legs belonged to a Caucasian male. The first task was to look at missing persons reports. There was a report that caught their attention. A 32-year-old man had been reported missing by his wife in South Africa. Gerard Lowe, a chemical engineer for South African Breweries, had left Johannesburg 2 days before and had not been in contact. He left his itinerary with his wife, Vanessa. He called her from Johannesburg Airport before he left and left a message on her phone stating that he would call upon his arrival in Singapore. He never did. It was very unusual. He was reliable and would always call. Gerard was only supposed to be there for a day or two, as his only business was to buy some electronics. Records showed that Gerard cleared customs at Changi Airport in Singapore on Wednesday, the 8th of March, 1995. This is when he must have met a man called Simon Davis, who arrived on the same day on a flight from San Francisco. Simon said he was a businessman who sold clothes from Mexico, and he was headed to Bangkok via Singapore. The man called Simon was well-presented and friendly, and they had a short conversation. But he was not who he had said he was. Simon Davis was John Martin, and he had found a victim in Gerard. When John established that Gerard was traveling alone, he suggested that they share the local hotel room to save costs. Gerard, not realizing the imminent danger, agreed. Perhaps John found common ground with Gerard, explaining that his alias, Simon, was born in South Africa. Perhaps there was a familiarity that made Gerard agree to the man's strange request. We will never know why he agreed. But either way, both men checked into the Riverview Hotel on Havelock Road and went up to the room. John used the name of Simon Davis to register. Moments after they arrived, as Gerard was looking over his shopping list, his new friend went at him with a 10,000-volt taser gun until he was unresponsive. He then took the unconscious Gerard into the hotel room bathroom, where he bludgeoned him on the head with a camping hammer, killing him instantly. With a foldable knife, John Martin started with the dismemberment process. Because he had the right equipment and he knew exactly what he was doing, it didn't take very long. He would later say in court that it would take a skilled butcher about 5 minutes to dismember an animal. Dismembering a human body would not be much different. When he was finished, he packaged all of Gerard's body parts into separate black plastic bags, then packed it in his luggage and stored it in the wardrobe. Then he took some time to craft a new identity. By taking Gerard's passport and removing the photo and replacing it with his own, Simon Davis, who was really John Martin, now had a South African passport, showing that he was now Gerard Lowe. At this point, John decided it was time to head out for some sightseeing and shopping. He bought himself a video recorder, hi-fi stereo speakers, and running shoes, all the while using Gerard's credit cards. He ended the day by attending the symphony at Victoria Memorial Hall, sitting back and enjoying compositions of Brahms and Tchaikovsky while his victim was decomposing in the hotel room. The next morning, John, posing as Simon Davis, went to the front desk and requested that they take Gerard Lowe's name off of the hotel guest register. He was asked to provide a reason, and he reluctantly told a story about an uncomfortable encounter with Gerard Lowe. He claimed that he had asked Gerard to leave after Gerard tried to seduce him. He did not realize Gerard was homosexual and did not want to share a room with someone who had ulterior motives. Hotel management left it at that and removed Gerard's name from the register. Early on Wednesday morning, March 11th, in the cover of dark, John was seen by a security guard at the Riverview Hotel, leaving the lobby and dragging his luggage. He left around 6:30 and returned 15 minutes later without his suitcase. Later that same morning, the hotel guest who had registered as Simon Davis checked out of the Riverview Hotel and headed for the airport. Then, a bag containing two severed legs were found off of Clifford Pier. Police suspected that their victim was missing South African Gerard Lowe and traced his movements after his arrival at Changi Airport. They were able to establish that he had checked into Riverview Hotel with a man called Simon Davis. When police went into his room, room 1511, they found it in disarray, and the unmistakable smell of death lingered within its four walls. Searching the room, they could not see any blood. But when they had a look in the bathroom, they found splashes of blood on the toilet bowl. The blood matched the legs found in the water. They were getting closer to identifying their victim and asked for blood samples of Gerard's sister, which was sent straight away and arrived in Singapore the next day. It was a match, and the homicide investigation could start. Less than a week after the first trash bag was discovered, a second one was found floating off of Clifford Pier. It contained Gerard's thighs and his torso, cut up with the same precision as the legs. Despite many search attempts, His head was never found, making it difficult to establish a cause of death. Vanessa Lowe arrived in Singapore 2 weeks later to claim her husband's remains and assist police with their investigation. She did not know who would want to murder her husband. He was kind and friendly and would not harm a soul. She had never heard of the man called Simon Davis and had no idea how he knew her husband. Singapore police reached out to Scotland Yard to help them locate South African-born British citizen Simon Davis. They were able to link their suspect to another identity, that of John Martin Scripps. John had applied for a British passport in the British High Commission in Singapore on a previous visit, and the photos matched up. Police realized that Simon and John were one and the same man. But whoever he was, they had no idea where he had gone. From hotel phone records, police saw that John had called Thomas Cook, the foreign exchange service in Robinson Road in Singapore. Staff at Thomas Cook confirmed that the man they were looking for had transferred a large amount of money to his account in the U.S. Because the transfer would take a couple of days to complete, John said he would go to Thailand and then return to Singapore when it was all done. He had also purchased a ticket to Bangkok from the Thomas Cook travel agent at the same premises. Thai police confirmed that a Simon Davis had arrived in the country, but they did not know his whereabouts. Police in Singapore had no choice but to wait for his return, hoping he wouldn't change his mind. Meanwhile, the media was eager to get the story out. It's not every day human body parts are found floating in the harbor. But police pleaded with them to keep it under wraps as long as possible. They were afraid that John might see the news about the investigation and decide not to return to Singapore. It was too much of a gamble. The press respected this request. Fortunately, it paid off. And using the passport identifying himself as Simon Davis, John Martin returned to Singapore. He arrived at Changi Airport on March 19, 1995. He was taken into custody as soon as he reached customs. He was taken to an airport holding cell and was everything but cooperative. He was agitated and angry. In a fit of rage, he smashed the glass window and attempted to slit his wrist with one of the shards. But officials were quick to contain him and prevented him from hurting himself. In John's luggage, they found the 10,000-volt taser gun, a can of mace, two serrated knives, two Swiss Army knives, and a 1.3-kilogram camping hammer. It is important to note that airport security was much more relaxed than the 1990s. As an example of how much things have changed, consider that smoking was allowed on flights up until the late 1990s. Today, it may sound far out that John could have made it onto a plane and another country with all of those weapons. But again, things were different back then. Passengers were permitted to travel with blades up to 4 inches long. This was before 9/11, of course, after which security measures had changed dramatically. Also in his possession was Gerard Lowe's credit cards and his South African passport with John Martin's photo. He had traveler's checks and cash to the value of $40,000. What concerned police greatly was the fact that there were two more passports in the bag, that of Canadian mother and son, Sheila and Darren Demude. Confronted with the evidence, John remained absolutely silent. He did not even speak when asked to identify himself. He did not confirm, nor did he deny anything. He simply kept his mouth shut. Police needed more time, as they realized John would never confess to the murder. So they charged him with forgery for falsifying Gerard's passport. This bought them only 1 week's time, a very short time to build a murder case. After a week, they would have had to release their prime suspect. Desperate for evidence, police in Singapore contacted Thai and Canadian police to inquire about Sheila and Darren Demude. They established that someone with the name Scripps had checked into the same hotel as them in Phuket, Nili's Marina Inn, overlooking Patong Beach. Sheila and Darren arrived on March 15th for a week's holiday from British Columbia. Sheila was an administrator at a school in Victoria, and her son was a college student. Darren had already spent part of his spring break in Asia and met up with his mother in Bangkok before traveling to Phuket together. They met John on the flight from Bangkok to Phuket, and he was simply a friendly co-traveler. After chatting on the plane, they went to the hotel together and checked in at the same time. Their rooms were on the same floor, close to each other. Having struck up somewhat of a travel companionship, the Demudes arranged to meet John for breakfast the next morning. What they didn't realize was that they had made a date with death. After breakfast, they all went back upstairs. John managed to get into the room as mother and son were gathering their things to go to the beach. And as he did with Gerard Lowe in Singapore, John used the taser gun to incapacitate his victims. Then, after killing them by bludgeoning them with the camping hammer, he dragged both bodies into the bathroom to start the process of dismemberment. He followed the same procedure exactly. After cutting up the bodies, he placed the parts in garbage bags and then set out to dispose of them. He used their passports to create more aliases for himself. Also, being able to identify himself as Darren Demude, he could cash his victims' traveler's checks. With his victims slaughtered and packaged in their hotel room, John Martin went to the front desk of the hotel. He checked out of his own room and asked if he could switch to room 43, the Demude's room, as they had left early in the morning. He paid their bill and no questions were asked. Thai police were able to trace his movements after the murders. One of the hotel's receptionists remembered John leaving the hotel with bags and driving off on a rented motorcycle. And after that, the Canadians were never seen again. Some days later, two severed heads, badly decomposed, were found in a disused tin mine. A torso and two pairs of arms and legs were also discovered along Ban Nai Trang Road, 6 miles, or almost 10 kilometers from the hotel. All of these parts were in a bad state of decomposition and had to be identified by a medical examiner. Using dental records, the examiner was able to confirm that the bodies belonged to the Canadian mother and son. The crime scene in the hotel in Phuket had a lot more blood than the room in Singapore. Samples of blood were taken and could be matched to traces found on the camping hammer John Martin had in his possession when he arrived at Changi Airport. Law enforcement agencies in both Thailand and Singapore felt that the murders of Gerard Lowe and the Demudes were committed by the same perpetrator, John Martin, aka Simon Davis. Prosecution used the evidence from Thailand to strengthen their case and were able to charge him with murder. While on remand, John Martin went on a hunger strike. When his appointed attorney visited him, he found a wreck of a man. He cried and said that he wanted to see his mother. It was hard to reconcile the two sides of this murderer. On the one hand, he was a cold-blooded killer. And yet on the other, he was a fragile, semi-literate man who could only be comforted by his mom. John Martin was not a sophisticated criminal. Far from it. His weakness, time and time again, was his inability to properly cover his tracks. He was quite skilled in committing the murders and subsequent fraud, but he was sloppy in getting away. The fact that he entered Singapore using the same identity as the one he used to check into the hotel with Gerard Lowe is an example of this. Had he re-entered as Darren Demudes, chances are he would have evaded capture. He was formally charged for the murder of Gerard Lowe in September 1995. His trial began in October. He was regarded as a dangerous man, and there was strict security in the courtroom. John sat between two police officers inside a glass and metal cage. He was handcuffed, and his legs were in shackles. At trial, John stuck to his story that Gerard was gay, and that he had made sexual advances on him. He said when he realized Gerard was not backing down, he panicked and hit him over the head with the camping hammer. This was an attempt to reduce his charge to manslaughter instead of murder, which would mean a life sentence instead of execution. Gerard's widowed wife, Vanessa, testified that Gerard was definitely not gay. Forensic evidence also proved that John's story was not true, as there was no blood on the carpet or on the bed in room 1511. John did not hit Gerard with the hammer, as he was fending him off while he was in bed. Instead, evidence showed that Gerard was tasered, then taken to the bathroom where he was murdered and mutilated. But that was not all. John Martin testified that he had not acted alone. He told the court that a British acquaintance that he had known for 10 years helped him dispose of the body. According to John, this acquaintance, whom he refused to name, stayed at a hotel on the resort island of Sentosa. This man had worked in an abattoir in the past, and John knew that he would be able to help him. When it was all done, the man supposedly disposed of the garbage bags while John hid in his hotel room. When asked why he did not want to name his accomplice, John said that the man was very dangerous, and he was afraid that if he implicated him, the man would take revenge on John's family back in England. But all that the story proved was that John was not only a murderer and a thief, but also a pathological liar. Investigators had followed up, matching hotel records and surveillance. It simply was not true. After a 16-day trial, on the 10th of November, 1995, John Martin was found guilty of Gerard Lowe's murder. He was sentenced to hang. He cried as he made a statement. "I know it looks like I've murdered everybody whose credit card was found on me, but I am not a violent man." His lawyers appealed the sentence and hoped to change it to life imprisonment. However, on January 4th of the following year, John Martin sent a handwritten letter asking the court to withdraw the appeal. He was prepared to let justice take its course. Although evidence from the Demude's crime scene in Thailand was essential in securing his conviction, John Martin was never charged with the murders of Sheila and Darren. With the conclusion of his trial, however, Thai and Canadian police were able to close the case on the deaths of the traveling mother and son as well. It was official that John Martin was responsible for the deaths of at least three people. But were there more victims? Had he committed murders whenever he traveled? Red flags were raised when police also found documents on British backpacker Timothy McDowell amongst John's possessions. Looking back at the case of Timothy's disappearance in Belize, police could see that a substantial amount of money was transferred from his bank account to John Martin Scripps' account in the UK. The same amount was later transferred to an account in the US, also in the name of John Martin Scripps. Scotland Yard sent investigators to Singapore to interview John about the disappearance and suspected murder of Timothy McDowell. When John heard why the investigators were there, he flew into a rage and refused to speak to him. He felt betrayed by his defense attorney for allowing them to come and see him. His reaction was sudden and violent, and his attorney saw a side of him he had never seen before. Unfortunately for Timothy McDowell's family, John Martin never confessed to anything and took the details of Timothy's disappearance to his grave. Another suspected victim was 24-year-old backpacker William Shackle, who had spent some time in Cancun. William would also never return home. He disappeared right after cashing £4,000 in traveler's checks, and to this day, he has never been found. There was also an unsolved murder of a male prostitute in San Francisco that placed a question mark behind John Martin's name. 25-year-old Tom Winger was murdered and dismembered in March of 1994. John was supposed to have been in the UK at the time, but a composite picture made by San Francisco police in the Tom Winger case matched John Martin. He also refused to talk about this case before his execution. During his last days on death row in Singapore, John wrote poems to his ex-wife, Maria Pilar, declaring his undying love for her. Maria did not want to see him before his execution. Despite his dyslexia, he insisted on writing incessantly, rambling on about life, love, and loneliness. Hours before his execution, he wrote one final note. "But grant thys, I love peace and happiness. One day poor, one day rich. Money filled the pain of hunger, but what will fill the emptiness inside? I know that love is beyond me. So do I give myself to God the God that has betrayed me? You may take my life for what it is worth, but grant those I love peace and happiness. Can I be a person again? Only time will tell me. For his last meal, John asked for a pizza and a cup of hot chocolate. There was only one Westerner to be executed in Singapore before him, a Belgian man called Johan Van Damme, who in 1994 was sentenced to death for drug trafficking offenses. John Martin Scripps was executed by hanging on the 19th of April, 1996. He would go down in history as the first Westerner to be hanged in Singapore for murder. If you'd like to read more about this case, have a look at the resources used for this episode in the show notes. Also, visit and like our Facebook page at facebook.com/evidencelockerpodcast to see more about today's case. If you like our podcast, please subscribe in Apple Podcast or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts. If you like our podcast, please subscribe in Apple Podcast or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts. We would also appreciate it if you could review the episodes, as it gives us some street cred in the world of podcasting. This was The Evidence Locker. Thank you for listening.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.